This is Audible. Alice Watson was a physicist in a hurry.
Come on,
she urged, cycling furiously through Oxford. Alice glared at pedestrians through her thin-rimmed glasses as strands of hair escaped from her neatly tied bun. She turned off the high street by the church, into the square beyond, pedaling past the compact circular form of the Radcliffe Camera. Sunlight coloured its sandstone columns gold, casting shadows beyond the balustrades and parapets above. Like a mini St. Paul's, its domed lead roof shone silver in the crisp morning light. She was going to be late, which was ironic, considering what she'd be late for. "Look out!" Alice shouted. A man in an old-fashioned jacket and bow tie stepped off from the pavement in front of her, concentrating intently on a handheld device. She swerved to avoid him, and the man spun awkwardly out of her way. Texting. The streets of Oxford were pregnant with near collisions between cyclists and inattentive road crossers. Accident statistics were probably available somewhere. Alice liked numbers. She made a mental note to look them up. In another 5 minutes, she'd reached the Earth Science area. The professor had co-opted the lab from the geology people when they'd realized they had more rooms than fellows. Alice stopped at the traffic lights. If she could have told herself 11 months ago all she knew now, she wasn't sure she'd believe herself. In fact, Alice thought, I might put that theory to the test. It was Saturday, 23rd of November 2013. The day the human race discovered time travel. Doctor Who, The Time Machine, performed by Jenna Coleman, with Michael Cochrane as Chivers and Nicholas Briggs as the Krivitz. While his assistant cycled through Oxford, Professor Chivers was in his laboratory. His trembling fingers adjusted a set of controls and the static cleared.
I am receiving you. Go ahead.
We're on the final straight. The time core. The power source. It's in the usual place.
A fist-sized cube sat on his workbench between two speakers. It looked like smoked glass, yet magnetic clips held wires to its surface connected to an amplifier. Green bars bounced on the display in time with the voice. Thank goodness for Alice, the professor thought. She'd be here soon. Alice had set up the sound system, swapping his old-fashioned record player for a digital streamer linked to this strange cubic whatever it was. While Chivers was comfortable with transistor radios and gramophones, along with temporal theory and particle physics, touchscreen MP3 players left him a little lost.
Time to collect the final piece.
The voice that barked at him from the speakers was unnerving. It represented the future. The culmination of years of work, blind Ali's failures, then suddenly, the solutions arriving in his lap. Pulling on his coat, Chivers recalled his dream the night before, the few snatched hours when exhaustion got the better of anticipation. It had been disturbing. He'd had a feeling of being watched. Glimpses of glowing eyes, tall flickering shadows, flashes of something sharp, jagged, claw-like. He dismissed it. Apprehension was natural, faced with the greatest achievement in scientific history. He wasn't a young man. They wanted him out years ago, but the university pension could wait. He had to see this through. Chivers left his laboratory and scurried along the corridor. The voice from the cube had given its instructions, as it had done every week for the past 11 months. It was unnerving because of where it came from. Because it represented the inevitability of his success. But most of all, the voice was unnerving because it was his own. S- Saturdays for Alice were never very different from the rest of the week. The main attraction was the peace and quiet she'd enjoy when her housemates left for their evening entertainments along Cowley Road. She shared a cramped terrace with two medical students. Polly and Rachel had long since stopped bothering to ask her along. They were happy to leave Alice to her own devices, her thesis, her textbooks. The house smelled of Friday night kebabs, so Alice hadn't minded when the professor asked her to come in early. She parked her bike and swiped her ID card against the reader. The door to the labs opened, but long fingers stopped it swinging shut behind her. "In here, is it?" asked the man they belonged to. "Hello," said Alice. "Do I know you?" The odd-looking arrival in the bow tie seemed strangely familiar. His youthful face was friendly but distracted. The floppy fringe added to the impression. "Ah, the clothes," thought Alice. "The device in his hand, the texter." The man clicked his fingers. "The dangerous bike rider! We almost met," rather forcefully. "Hello, I'm the doctor." He held out his hand but seemed to lose interest by the time Alice shook it. "Alice. Alice Watson. You're going to get yourself killed if you're not careful." "So everyone tells me," the doctor replied, fiddling with his phone. It seemed to be set on vibrate. They crossed the hallway and Alice stopped outside the professor's laboratory. Her companion stopped too, looking expectantly at the door. "Can I help you?" she asked. The doctor waved his hand vaguely. "I'm looking for the thing," he said. "You know, the sciencey thing."
"Did Professor Chivers invite you?"
"That's the chap," grinned the doctor. "Chivers, old Chivity Chivers, the Chivmeister. Yes, he did."
"You're from Cambridge?" Alice guessed.
"In a roundabout way," he replied. "St. Ched's, 1980. Do you know it?" Alice remembered her last conversation with Professor Chivers. He'd mentioned inviting interested parties. She'd been skeptical about them actually turning up.
"You're one of the research fellows," she ventured.
"Ah," he smiled. "What gave me away? The air of authority, the aura of intelligence."
"Actually," said Alice, "the tweed and the bow tie?"
The man sniffed and self-consciously straightened his neckwear. "Shall we?" he said, pushing open the door. He slipped through, calling for the professor. Alice frowned and nudged her glasses higher on the bridge of her nose.
"I suppose you could wait," she called, following him into the lab.
"Just don't touch anything." There it was, in the corner of the room. The time machine. Most of it, anyway. It always reminded Alice of an electric two-seater car. Only instead of fiberglass, the capsule's frame was constructed of sleek brass tubing curved around a convex glass canopy. At the front, the tubes ended in two wide metallic spirals like bizarre headlights. No wheels, of course. The side door was open, angled upwards, revealing a maroon leather seat and below the windscreen, a dashboard of sorts. Sleek controls and screen displays were set into a walnut panel, all inert. The doctor had pocketed his phone and was running a green glowing torch over the canopy. A torch that buzzed. He poked his head inside and then suddenly started. Staring at the open side door, he backed away, waving the torch like a wand. "Alice, how many impossible things have you managed this morning?" he called.
Beg pardon?
"Alice, Wonderland, Looking Glass." He searched her face in vain for some hint of recognition. I don't know, what are students reading these days?
"Theoretical physics," Alice answered, "with a special temporal theory module."
"Well, there's one impossible thing right here," the doctor said, pointing his torch at the capsule. This time machine shouldn't exist." This was the reaction Alice expected.
"That's what I thought when the professor first told me about it," she said.
The doctor asked when that was. 11 months before, Alice told him. He moved to the communication setup on the bench, frowning at the cube in its nest of wires. He tapped the speakers. "Music while you work."
"Our communicator," Alice said, stepping between the doctor and the bench.
He seemed to be the hands-on type, and she knew Professor Chivers wouldn't want his equipment disturbed.
"We're notified when parts are ready for collection, with installation instructions."
"I see," mused the doctor. "Then you fetch them and follow these instructions." Alice nodded.
"We got the whole dashboard last month."
She pointed at the lifeless controls.
"I helped wire it into the frame. Professor Chivers writes everything down like an assembly manual."
"Clever, are you, Dr. Watson?" The doctor's question had an accusing tone.
"Yes," answered Alice, pushing her spectacles higher on the bridge of her nose. She never understood people who thought intelligence was something to be ashamed of.
Good, he nodded. Clever is cool. Only this machine, this invention, is the opposite of clever.
She asked what he meant.
I meant what I said, insisted the doctor. It's impossible. And if you're as clever as you think you are, you should be terrified.
He paused for a moment before continuing. I take it you can't see the 7-foot insect standing beside it.
Alice suddenly suspected this man wasn't from Cambridge, Yale, or Osaka. I'm sorry, she said. Who are you again?
I'm still the doctor, he replied. And you're still not scared, which I guess means you didn't see the other 5 next to your bike.
The other 5 giant invisible insects, said Alice, slowly edging towards the phone on the desk. There was no security at the weekend, but perhaps she could bluff. I think you better come back when Professor Chivers is here.
Yes, about this Chivers, inquired the doctor. Says Reynard above the door.
He was now studying the laboratory wall, certificates, mementos from the professor's long career. Alice wasn't sure how old Chivers was, but the rumour went he'd forgotten to retire.
The doctor rattled a filing cabinet and inspected his torch again, puzzled.
I don't think you should be doing that, Alice warned.
Everyone says that, he declared.
Never stopped me, not in 1,000 years.
Alice, could you tell me what's going on here?
A tall, balding man had appeared at the doorway, peering down his nose. He wore a long white lab coat over an outfit not dissimilar to the doctor's own. Under one arm, he carried a heavy bundle wrapped in black plastic. He rested it on the floor before repeating his question. Alice was relieved. Professor Chivers, this is...
In one bound, the doctor reached Chivers and completed the introduction.
The doctor!
Hello.
Lovely time machine. I'm here to dismantle it.
Sorry.
Oh, I wondered how long it would be before the skeptics and the naysayers got wind. The most important discovery in the history of human science, and you want to destroy it.
If it's your discovery, Professor, the doctor replied, explain it to me. Go on. Tell me how it works.
Chivers waved his hand impatiently.
Well, it traverses the spatio-temporal interface to emerge at any selected point in time.
The doctor shook his head. That's what it does, but not how it works. No theories, no experiments, no breakthroughs. Build a time machine like flat-packed furniture, you'll end up with something far worse than a wonky table. Don't you see how wrong it is?
On the contrary, Doctor. I'm assured my experiments will succeed, because I'm sending the instructions myself from the future.
The doctor slapped his forehead in despair. See? That's exactly what I'm talking about. You've got some explaining to do.
He jabbed his thumb towards the cube on the desk.
You can start by telling me how you got hold of a Time Lord hypercube.
A what? That device was delivered with the first pieces of the time machine, the frame and canopy, in an office at the Travers Building. I paid a rowing crew £80 to carry them here. Do you recall, Alice?
Alice remembered being rather flustered when the strapping lads had started flirting. She suspected they'd been laughing at her.
The doctor began to protest again, and Chivers placed an arm over his shoulder, guiding him towards the door.
I have everything under control, Doctor... whoever you are. There is a causal nexus, a time loop, if you like. One event predicates the other, but their existence is inescapable.
The doctor ducked under the professor's arm and turned towards the time machine, staring fiercely at the spot 1 foot to its right.
Don't lecture me on temporal theory, Chivers, he barked. You might be a time professor, but I'm a time lord.
Time lord? What a ridiculous notion. How can one be a peer of a theoretical state?
I don't know, the doctor snapped. Ask the Duke of El.
Anyway, I intend to dismantle the device myself, once I've used it. I have to, don't you see? To repeat the exercise. I've contacts across the globe who've all expressed interest.
Alice knew this part of the plan. She'd heard the professor explain it often enough. She eagerly chipped in. The fact of the machine's existence means the procedure can be replicated by others. It can be rebuilt, used, then disassembled, so long as everyone using it sends it back in time to be rebuilt, used, and disassembled. We can duplicate it ad infinitum.
The doctor was far from convinced.
No, 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 no. This is wrong. It sounds wrong. It smells wrong. It tastes wrong.
I've never heard anything so ridiculous. Why, I...
Took the words right out of my mouth. The doctor interrupted. You say you've made a time loop. Think about it. What shape's a loop?
Round, Alice answered. Oval, at the very least. Depends on how many dimensions you use to track causality.
Let's keep things simple, the doctor said, holding up a hand, making a circle with his finger and thumb.
Let's say it's round.
What else is round?
A hole.
Things get in through holes.
Chivers' exasperation turned to amusement. The fellow clearly believed this nonsense.
What things? What are you talking about?
You're down the rabbit hole, Alice, the doctor murmured. Alice frowned blankly. The professor waved a dismissive hand.
A pointless literary allusion, young man. Alice is not a great reader, not of fiction at any rate. Lewis Carroll, Conan Doyle, Dickens, even the Bard of Avon, all lost on her.
Alice pushed her glasses back into place self-consciously. I only deal in facts, Doctor, she said. No point wasting time on fictions.
No stories. The Doctor's eyes widened. You're next to one of the world's greatest libraries, for goodness sake.
He frowned. What do you do to relax? Despite herself, Alice considered.
I rather like stationery shops.
Can while away an hour in a stationery shop. Yes, I see the attraction, the doctor nodded. Oh, I prefer moving ones myself. That was a joke.
Alice doesn't do jokes either. A very focused young woman. Just what I need. No time for fantasists here, Doctor, so if you don't mind...
The doctor prodded the cube attached to the speakers. Mind if I take your cube? He asked. I say, your cube. Don't like me touching that, do you? He addressed the empty space beside the capsule. Chivers frowned. The man was quite mad. Alice stared too. Something shifted, a flicker, a nightmare shadow at the edge of her vision. Oh my God, what was that?
As I say, things get in through holes, the doctor insisted, stepping forward. You've an infestation, Professor, and you're going to need more than fly spray to get rid of it.
Eyes narrowed, he raised his chin defiantly.
Come on then!
Show yourself. Alice blinked and stared in horror as reality cracked and a monster formed. She saw something huge. A black insectoid exoskeleton, glowing compound eyes, mandibles, claws.
What is it?
She breathed. Chivers shook his head.
Not you too, Miss Watson. There's nothing there.
Am I imagining it?
Alice whispered. No. You're not, the doctor assured her. The fact you can see it means you're outside of the loop, in danger. Alice looked more closely at the thing. Fascination began to edge out her terror at its appearance. She jumped as the creature spoke, its mouth parts scraping together, a voice rattled forth.
You cannot stop us.
Hello, said the doctor, cautiously. Why would I want to stop you?
We are already here.
So I see. Who are you? He asked.
We are the Kreeviks. You cannot stop us.
The doctor tapped his chin. Kreeviks. Sorry if we've met, I don't remember. So hard to put names to mandibles.
We have not met. You cannot stop us.
He peered at the creature curiously. From round here, are you? Chivers was getting impatient. As far as he was concerned, this madman was having a one-sided conversation with thin air.
Really, Doctor, I must insist. I've important work to get on with.
Can't you see it, Professor?
Alice hissed. And then she stifled a yelp as five creatures slid into existence beside the first. Terror was back. They formed a wall between the Doctor and the time machine.
You cannot stop us.
Right. Clearly, I can't stop you. The doctor turned on his heel, scanning the room. Not here. Not now. Alice could almost see cogs whirring in his mind. He winked at her. His gaze rested on the workbench. The hypercube.
You cannot stop us.
Got that? The doctor wagged a finger. Question is, stop you doing what? He sprung to the table and plucked the cube from the wires. Alice's eyes widened as the monsters reached out long, bony limbs, their claws grating against each other. She blinked. And then the Kreeviks were gone. I don't understand, she gasped. The doctor was at her side, speaking quickly and quietly. I followed a trace of something very wrong to this place, a splinter of wrongness sticking into the universe right here in this room. Now I realize it's from somewhere else. What do you mean? Alice asked. What were those things? You've a choice, Alice Watson. He held out a hand. Come with me, or stay here with Chivers and his new friends.
But there's nobody else here.
Alice looked again. Over the professor's shoulder, the nightmare creatures had returned. Black skeletal arms extended around his oblivious form. Alice tried to shout a warning, but no sound came. The doctor bent toward her ear and whispered one word. Run. Outside the laboratory, Oxford seemed normal. There were the usual Saturday crowds, the familiar mix of town, gown and happy snappers. But as Alice and the doctor pushed between the shoppers and tourists, they glimpsed clicking black mandibles among rucksacks and raincoats. Alice saw a bulbous eye peering through the window of the pub on the corner and quickened her pace. They reached Broad Street, and the Sheldonian Theatre, its outer wall topped with sculptures of great bearded faces. As they passed by, inhuman shapes emerged from behind the stone features. Insect heads. Alice ran. At the entrance to the Bodleian Library, the doctor flashed a card. The electronic gate was already opening, letting them through at full pelt. What's it this time, Doctor? Wheezed the porter, tipping his bowler hat. End of the world! The doctor called over his shoulder. End of the universe, actually, Les! Alice managed a bewildered smile at Les, as she followed the doctor down the wooden stairs and into the library corridors. Things were getting beyond her. They hurried through a reading room, their creaking footsteps earning disapproving stares from silent academics. At the far end was another flight of stairs. They descended. Have we lost them? Alice asked. The doctor grinned at her madly. He seemed to be enjoying himself. I doubt that very much, Watson. The game's afoot. It was darker here. Alice knew they were underground, though she never normally came to this part of the library. Classics and theology. Not her sort of thing at all. They reached the Linkway underground tunnel connecting the main library to the labyrinth of bookstacks beneath Oxford. Where are we going? Alice panted as they stopped at a T-junction. The doctor waggled a finger, finally settling to a point in one direction. He set off in the other, further into the dark. Pops along here. Shh. He stopped suddenly and Alice bumped into him. What is it? She whispered, blinking in the gloom. The doctor nodded over her shoulder, and she turned slowly to see two glowing orbs shift from a recess behind them. Alice's heart pounded, and she felt the doctor's hand grip hers. They're here, he breathed. The creatures were solid, not just glimpses out of the corner of her eye. Monsters were real, and they were hunting her. Chivers spread open the black bin bag on his laboratory floor. It didn't matter about the communicator, although he'd like to have examined it now its job was done. But now he had the final piece. He lifted a glowing blue cylinder from the plastic. His mouth was dry with excitement. He took an envelope from inside his lab coat, left in his pigeonhole as usual. Schematics for the installation of the time core. Strange to think that his own hands had held this device, removed it from its housing in the future. He examined the diagram. It looked simple enough. Chivers took an electric screwdriver from his toolbox and set to work on his time machine. Alice ran through underground corridors between rows of shelving stacked with books. She didn't look back, but felt the insects closing. Up ahead, the doctor grabbed one of the shelf stacks and wheeled it out, revealing an alcove behind. An old blue police box stood in the recess. Alice was confused. What's that supposed to be? She asked. She felt panic rising inside. The doctor had brought them to a dead end. Now he was calmly searching his pockets. You want us to hide? In a cupboard? Yes, well, he said, producing a key. He wouldn't know about Narnia. He unlocked the door and stepped through. Don't dawdle, Watson, he called from inside. The monsters are coming. Still not daring to look back, Alice stumbled over the threshold. What the... She froze. Open-mouthed. She'd have to rewrite half her thesis. No, she'd have to tear it up and start again. The doctor stood at an impossible shining control console. Shut the doors, Alice, he called. There's a draft. Still gaping, Alice backed into the doors, pushing them closed behind her. Your effort back there, the doctor began, brushing an invisible speck of dust from the flashing controls. That's not a time machine. This is a time machine. He plugged the cube he'd taken from Chivers into the top of the console. It glowed milky white. And this is a Time Lord psychic hypercube. I need to track where those messages came from. A long shot, Watson. A very long shot. Finally, Alice's brain accepted what she was seeing. Starting a mental catalogue of questions, she pushed her glasses onto the bridge of her nose and stepped forward. The doctor looked up with a puzzled expression. That's odd, he said. There was an empty space where the cube had just been. Let's try something else. Chivers replaced the last of the screws holding the hatch in place and mopped his brow.
There. I've done it. I've built a time machine.
He gathered his notes, a buff folder with transcripts of his messages from the future, and some sandwiches. Cheese and pickle. He'd no idea what food would exist in the future, so he thought it best to prepare. He placed the folder and the plastic tub on the leather seat and stepped back to admire his handiwork. Then, Chivers took a final look around his laboratory. He took in his certificates, his record player. Mementos, the world of 2013. He was ready. He froze in fear as a monster from his dream appeared. It was 7 feet tall, with glowing bulbous eyes and powerful skeletal limbs. Its carapace shone black like that of a beetle. Chivers gulped and backed away.
Alice and that Dr. Feller. They were right. What do you want?
The Kreevik stepped towards him and said one word.
Wait.
Is it supposed to do this? Alice yelled above the sound of the doctor's machine. The professor said travel through the continuum would be instantaneous.
The doctor shook his head as he fought the controls. You're not ready. Not yet. Time travel's a delicate skill, needs finesse. A distant bell sounded, joining the cacophony of the engines. The doctor thumped his fist onto the console and everything calmed.
So I see, Alice observed.
She stared around the room. Yes, the dimensions were impossible. And yes, the doctor's claims utterly improbable, but still. She'd just spent 11 months watching her tutor talk to himself from the future while building a time machine. Impossible was relative. The doctor looked up from a monitor, his face lit from below by an unearthly green light. Worry creased his youthful features.
The splinter of wrongness was more like a forest, he said.
This is bad. This is very bad. The room lurched again and Alice's stomach did somersaults.
We're stuck, he announced. The vortex is chocker with something. Lots of somethings.
The protesting engines fell silent. The doctor pirouetted and slammed a lever on the console. He examined another screen and scowled at what he saw. Here and no further, he said. Forward or back, less than 20 years from where we started.
Are you going to explain anything? Alice demanded. What does that bell mean?
Nothing good, the doctor said. He strode towards the doors and pushed them open.
Come on, Watson!
She had no choice but to follow. They stepped out of the TARDIS onto cobbles.
Is this the future?
Alice asked. A future, the doctor replied. That's the trouble. Those creatures in your time machine, they've set the timelines in flux. They'd landed in the corner of a square. They were still in Oxford. The colonnaded dome of the Radcliffe Camera stood on its patch of green. Behind it, the church tower of St. Mary's reached toward grey skies mottled with angry purple clouds. To Alice, the familiar surroundings seemed suddenly alien. She looked up. The lead roof of the library dome was moving. Alice caught her breath as she saw something crawling. Kreeviks rasped and rattled as they scuttled over each other. Alice looked round. The roofs and spires of every other building were the same, infested. The doctor was at the edge of the square. He beckoned her over. "Are we going back to the lab?" Alice asked. He shook his head. "No need. Look, where buses and bikes usually sped past this corner, now Alice saw none. Yet there were vehicles, of a kind. Dozens of familiar shapes littered the road as far as she could see. The professor's time machine," she gasped. Less than a meter away, the air fizzed with blue energy, forming the outline of yet another capsule. An empty time machine solidified on the pavement beside them. "No wonder the vortex is jammed," pondered the doctor. "Like you said, it's been replicated ad infinitum and beyond." "But where are the people?" Alice wondered. "Good question." The sky darkened. Alice started as one of the creatures scuttled headfirst down the wall beside them. It bent its legs over its body in a strangely unnatural arc, and its exoskeleton unfolded to stand upright.
"Doctor."
He waved at the advancing Kreeviks. "Hello? Want to chat?"
"You cannot stop us. You cannot stop the Kreeviks, Time Lord."
A little way off, two more capsules appeared. Alice tugged the doctor's sleeve. "It called you Time Lord. You called yourself that before. What does it mean?" "It means I know how this works," he answered. "Temporal flux, paradox states, Time Lord. It's in the job description." "Saving the universe," Alice murmured. "Is that in the job description too?" The doctor strode towards the Kreeviks. "No," he said. "That's more of a hobby." The creature raised a threatening claw.
"The Time Lords are gone."
"You think there's a vacancy, do you?" He glared at the monster. "Look again."
"You are but one. You cannot stop us. This universe is fractured. We will consume it."
"Who broke it?" demanded the doctor. "And how?"
"We are the Kreeviks. You claim lordship over time, but we are its masters. Not a moment passes in our universe that we have not willed, that we cannot devour. So shall it be in this universe."
"So that's where you're from," the doctor realized. "Next universe along, Masters of Time, eh? Doesn't it get boring?"
"Knowing everything anyone is ever going to say or do, it is useless to run to your time ship."
The doctor glanced across the square. The TARDIS was surrounded by insectoid forms prodding and scratching its surface. "Mind the paintwork," he warned. Alice froze as the Kreeviks reached a serrated claw into her hair, more delicately than she thought possible. It drew a strand from her neat bun. She hardly dared breathe. "Doctor?" Her voice was barely a whisper. "What's it doing?" "Moving in," the doctor stated. "They feed on time-space potential, read the future like a book, then eat the pages. Am I right, Kreeviks?"
"What are these things, these humans? They exist for an instant. They have all the substance of a passing thought."
"I've had some very inspiring passing thoughts," said the doctor. "Leave her alone." Alice sagged with relief as the Kreeviks withdrew its claw.
"Her life is but an insignificant moment. But you... we would be rid of you. But the future then becomes unclear."
There was a trace of a smile in the doctor's eyes. "You can't kill me. I might regenerate, and that would be unpredictable. You need me where you can see me." He twirled his sonic screwdriver between his fingers.
"That device cannot harm us."
"No, but it can confuse you." At the burst of sound, the Kreeviks flinched.
"You have no future, Doctor."
"That's possible. But I do have a present," he countered. "What are you doing?" asked Alice. They backed away from the reeling insect. "Temporal phasing," the doctor explained. "He's getting the beam from my sonic several microseconds before I send it. The time sensitive's new in town. That's more than a little discombobulating." "Ooh, good word, discombobulating." Alice looked around desperately. Everywhere, Kreeviks scuttled down the walls, surrounding them, closing in. Across the square, the blue of the TARDIS was lost beneath a huddle of black exoskeletons. "Well, what can we do?" cried Alice, holding onto the edge of understanding. They know where we'll go before we do. They've got your ship. I don't know if you've noticed, the doctor strode to the nearest capsule. One or two other time machines lying around. He swung open the canopy and waved her in. Seeing the monster swarming over Oxford, Alice realized there wasn't a choice. She scrambled inside, scooting along the leather seat to make room. The doctor climbed in and sealed the door. Now, let's find out where this time machine's from. Inside his time machine, Captain Guy Taylor was ready. He was the kind of man who'd be tempted to say he'd been born ready, but only tempted. There were others in the agency who he knew wouldn't hesitate to make the claim. Maybe one day he'd be like them, but he hoped not. Guy held up the holo photo. Mum and Dad. The scientist and the captain. They'd been so proud when he qualified. Working at the boundaries of technology, the forefront of exploration. The Time Agency. Mission 1. An anomaly way back in the 21st century. Guy's training had been particularly emphatic on this point. Any period pre-century 42, agents had to take particular care not to reveal themselves. There were temporal treaties in place for the last half millennium. They knew what to expect from a visit from time agents. It was good for training, decades here, a century there. But where Guy was going now, thousands of years pre-temporal active, things were very different. Back in 2013, time travel was definitely undiscovered. Guy completed the pre-flight checks. Core online, he repeated the protocols out loud. Vortex transduction fields on. Destination set. The green ignition button flashed invitingly. Guy studied the photo. His mother, bohemian and beautiful. His father, resplendent in uniform. Back when they met, every mission they'd taken could have been their last. They'd lived with that danger until Dad's close call. That had prompted the second honeymoon, where they'd decided what was important. The year after this picture, Guy had arrived. But before that, they'd taken risks. It must run in the family. Made it, Ma. Pa. Top of the world, Guy murmured. He put the photo into the dashboard storage, beside the souvenir which his dad had given him. A memento of his lucky escape. Guy sealed the compartment cover with his security bracelet. Alrighty then. 2013, here I come. It was time to go. Time to go, said the doctor. Outside the capsule, the Krivix gathered, blocking out the light. Alice tensed as their claws scraped across the canopy. Go where? She asked. To where this vessel came from. Look, this time machine's got a glove box. A compartment lay open below the dashboard. Alice and Chivers had noticed the faint outline on the frontage, but the hairline crack proved impervious to all attempts to open it. They concluded that it was decorative. But no, the doctor and his sonic screwdriver had done the impossible and unlocked it. He rifled through the contents and removed a photograph. No, it was more than a photograph. Alice's eyes adjusted to see a 3D image of a smiling, waving couple. The image jumped, and the picture played again. The doctor stared through the picture. Holo photo. He seemed lost in thought. The silver fox and the gold braid looks familiar. So does the woman, only older, or was it younger? You think the capsule is theirs? Asked Alice. Perhaps. Let's see what their story is. The doctor delved deeper into the glove box, giving a sideways glance at Alice. His curiosity got the better of him. So, why the aversion to fiction? What's your story, Alice Watson? Alice never liked talking about herself. I'm not one for stories. Never have been, she frowned. Of course, that marks you out when you're 8 and you haven't seen the same films as everyone else, watched the same TV shows, heard the same music. Weirdo Watson. The doctor nodded sympathetically. Cruelty of 8-year-olds. Give me a cyber army any day. It just made me more determined not to take an interest, Alice said. Didn't want to become an idiot like everyone else, turn my brain to mush with trivia. Every book I read was a textbook. All the telly I watched was science, documentaries. You came here, said the doctor. Your family must be proud. Not really, Alice admitted. Dad would have preferred a son, a footballer. Well, said the doctor. I'm impressed. But you folks are too, really. He wafted the photo. Like these two. Proud of the chap who drove this thing. Guy Taylor, aged 28, a newly commissioned time agent. Alice frowned. You can tell all that from the picture. The doctor grinned and held up an ID card for Alice to read. Captain Guy Taylor, licensed to drive time capsules grade 4 and below. Temporal authorization apparently covering 30 millennia either way. Alice struggled to take it in. What's a time agent? She asked. Humanity would discover time travel, the doctor explained, eventually. He gabbled about research, experiments, Ovidian stabilizers, Zygma beans. Alice's brain throbbed as she tried to understand. Wait, she interrupted. This capsule was built by the professor. All the copies, they're the same machine, built and rebuilt. But you're saying it actually came from somewhere else? The doctor ran a finger along the bottom of the windscreen. Even paradoxes have to start somewhere, he observed. He began flicking switches. Lights danced across the dashboard. An early model. Before miniaturization tech created vortex manipulators. Imagine that. A time machine you can wear on your wrist. Alice held up her hand. Already got one. She pointed to her watch and smiled. Oh, very good. The doctor grinned back. Thought you didn't do jokes. Pulsing blue light illuminated the cockpit. Alice felt a buzz of excitement as the machine hummed with power. Outside the window, the Krivix backed away. Still watching the displays, the doctor absently stuck his left hand back into the glove box. Oh, and I'd like to know where he got this. He handed something to Alice. A cube of smoked glass. Her jaw dropped. But that's the communicator. We need some answers, Alice. Where better to find them than this ship's point of origin, logged as Destination Zero? We're going back to the future! The doctor beamed.
I always wanted to say that.
Alice held a puzzled look and he deflated.
Marty McFly? No?
A big green button winked invitingly on the dashboard. The doctor took the hypercube back from Alice and lounged in his seat. You do the honors. She reached over the control and stopped, fingers hovering. She looked at the doctor over her glasses. Is it safe? The doctor's enthusiasm returned. You wanted to fly a time machine, Alice! Geronimo! Alice bit her lip and hit the button. Guy knew something was wrong, but no amount of training could prepare him for this. He hammered desperately at the controls. Alarms, proximity sensors, all going crazy. He blinked, and suddenly his reflection in the canopy became that of someone else. She was a woman. Pretty. Hair tied in a bun. Thin-rimmed glasses perched on her nose, clearly terrified. Beyond her image lay a black mass of something that scraped across the glass, jagged and claw-like. The last thing I saw as he helplessly wrestled with the controls was the face of the girl. Something touched his mind. A name. Alice? He heard one word. Who? Then he knew nothing more. Because Guy Taylor no longer existed in his universe. He never had. Who was that? Alice cried. She couldn't shake the image of the blonde young man she had just seen reflected in the glass. The doctor was frantically pressing buttons, flicking switches. The engines died, and he hit the dashboard in annoyance. Every light had gone out. Alice blinked nervously. The canopy glass was smoky, blackened. Are we still in Oxford? She asked. We're in trouble, came the doctor's reply. Alice recoiled as the canopy was wrenched open, powerful claws almost pulling the door from its hinges. A massive Krivix loomed into view.
This is your destiny.
The doctor narrowed his eyes. You knew, he breathed. For the first time since they'd met, Alice sensed that he wasn't quite sure of himself. Here, in this nightmare world, that thought terrified her. They scrambled out onto a bleak, devastated landscape. Cracked earth extended as far as they could see. The sky boiled a swirling purple. Lightning flashed across it. There was no sign of civilization. Instead, The blasted surface was alive with swarming Kreeviks, all oblivious to their arrival, except for the huge specimen before them.
The end of your universe.
What's happened? Alice asked. She stared at the bruised sky in horror as hordes of insects fell from it, streaming in from the void above to join the seething mass. The doctor shook his head, slowly. They happened. He angrily thumped the side of the capsule. Ugh! I'm usually better at spotting traps. The giant Kreeviks that had opened the capsule raised a claw.
It was inevitable. Every step, part of our design.
The doctor paced beside the capsule, fist clenched in frustration. Right from the start. They weren't hunting us. They were herding us. What's it mean? Alice asked. What have we done? The doctor halted. We just wiped Guy Taylor from existence. And if he never existed to fly that time machine...
Then it becomes our tool. The chrono collision displaces it into our universe. We use it to splinter yours, so we can feed on it.
Alice gasped. Impossible! You can't eat the universe! The doctor waved a hand to take in the devastation. I'm afraid it looks as if they already have. Look around. All that's left.
Your lifekind's future ended the day we arrived. At that moment, our victory was assured. You cannot stop us.
Alice tried to piece it together. You said they consume space-time potential. So that means all the people from 2013 onwards. Everybody's future. Neaton. She broke off-eyed. The doctor nodded sadly. It's got more potential than life itself.
We inundated billions of worlds, consuming billions upon billions of lives. You both remain to undertake one task. You will deliver the psychic communicator to the human Shivers. He will take it with him on his first journey to instruct his past self how to build the machine.
Kick-starting a paradox that props open the door, the doctor explained. You shouldn't be here. But if you've broken the rules... His eyes flashed and he pulled the hypercube from his pocket. So can I. He pressed the cube to his forehead, screwing his eyes shut. The Kreeviks leader tilted its head as if in amusement.
We have predicted your every move, Time Lord. Your words, these messages you now send, they are futile. The present and future are ours. The names in your mind, Dylan, Columbus, Houdini, Erskine, they are past. Irrelevant.
Alice watched the Kreeviks extend a glistening claw. The doctor's eyes were closed tight, deep lines creasing his forehead, his lips moving silently. She had to buy him time. With her heart in her mouth, she stepped between the monster and the doctor. So, what happens when the universe is one big anthill? She challenged. What then?
We consume all there is and move on.
The doctor's right, Alice replied defiantly. You don't belong here. You're like beetles inside a clock. You see the cogs, the working. You hear every tick, but you can't tell the time. The Kreeviks took a step closer, and suddenly Alice didn't feel quite so brave.
The doctor's clock has stopped.
It brushed Alice aside and gripped the doctor's arm with a huge claw. He sagged. His hand fell, still holding the dull glassy cube.
Your words go nowhere. They change nothing.
The monster's head swiveled between Alice and the doctor, its bulbous eyes aglow.
One of you will deliver the cube. It does not matter which. The other stays to observe the end of everything.
The doctor opened his eyes, and Alice looked at him expectantly. He answered with a tiny shake of his head, and grim resignation spread over his face. He held out the hypercube towards her. You go, Alice. Give Chivers a message from me. But, Doctor... Alice began. He put a finger to his lips, still staring at his feet. You don't deserve to be left here, with them. I... tried. But the Kreeviks is right. They know
every word I'll speak, every breath I take, every last beat of my heart.
The doctor looked up, and Alice was shocked by the desolation in his eyes. He leaned towards her, pressing the cube into her hand. He whispered something in her ear and straightened up. Alice saw the fight had left him. Something seemed broken inside. I don't understand. She shook her head and blinked away a tear. I'm sorry, Alice Watson. You had potential. The Credix give me no choice. I just have to... Stop. He bowed his head, arms hanging loose at his sides. Alice was pushed away as more Credix approached the motionless doctor. They closed in, claws flicking at his coat. No! She cried. Leave him alone! The leader dragged Alice backwards as she lost sight of the doctor's stricken face. He was gone behind the swarming insects.
He will stand eternal, immobile, until he rots. A monument to his dead universe.
Alice glared at the unblinking globes of the leader's eyes. It shoved her towards the time machine. Another Crevix levered itself out, scratching the leather seat.
It is prepared.
Alice felt defiance rising again.
You might get rid of humanity, but you'll never appreciate the universe the way we do.
You are wrong. It has been delicious.
Alice weighed the cube in her hand. The doctor's final words to her had made no sense, yet she was determined to pass them on. She climbed into the capsule. The display showed the destination. It was the 23rd of November, 2013. Alice pushed her spectacles into place and grimly pressed the button.
Wait.
The creature in front of Professor Chivers held up a claw.
You must take the communicator to send your instructions back.
But I don't have it. That doctor chap just took it.
Alice entered the lab, flanked by two more gigantic insects. She held the glassy cube in one hand, but looked thoroughly dejected. Defeated.
Your assistant has returned it.
Chivers hurried to her side.
Alice, are you all right? Where's that strange young fellow?
Alice took a breath. And when she spoke, there was a catch in her voice. Gone. He asked me to give you a message. More of a question, really.
Speak, human. It is of no consequence.
The Crevix rasped the phrase along with Alice.
How many roads must a man walk down?
The effect on Chivers was instantaneous. Color drained from his face.
The doctor... Oh, my... How could he... How could I have forgotten?
Crevix pointed a claw at the time machine.
Go, human Chivers. It is time.
The professor swayed, his hand at his temple. Alice saw something in his expression she'd never seen before. Doubt. He backed away from his machine.
Just a moment. This is a significant decision. I cannot leave so... precipitately.
Alice was taken aback. He'd been so driven, single-minded. This was his life's work.
I could be lost forever. What will happen to my children, my grandchildren?
Alice's jaw dropped. In the 11 months she'd worked with him, Chivers never mentioned a family. She just assumed. The hypercube in her hand glowed and crackled into life.
Ah! Got my message, Professor.
Alice's heart leapt. It was the doctor's voice.
I'd step away from the Crevix. They're going to get a bit agitated.
The three insects were scraping their mandibles, hesitating.
I notice things, you see. Can't go through the universe looking ahead. As Auntie Mabel used to say, look up, look down, look all around. It was the tie on the wall that gave it away. Your old school tie, Chivers. I know those colours, seen them before. So it's no surprise you made it into Oxford. After all, you had a very cool science teacher.
A young man in a bow tie breezed through the laboratory door. Ian Chesterton of Coal Hill, he elaborated. The doctor grinned at Professor Chivers. How have you been, Cedric? The doctor winked at Alice while prodding the nearest Crevix. The monster swayed unsteadily. She managed to speak.
How did you
No, Cedric, he finished. We ran into each other in the 60s. Of course, he was a lot younger and I was a lot older. I recommended some music to him. What did you think of Dylan? Cedric Chivers stared at the doctor in wonder.
It changed my life. Concerts, rallies. Oh, we lost our fire in the 70s, but by then I'd met Joyce.
And had children and grandchildren. The doctor pointed at a crudely drawn clock face pinned up beside the professor's old school tie. Come on, you don't think Cedric drew that himself, do you? Had it always been there? Alice wasn't sure. Beneath it was a photograph of Professor Chivers surrounded by youngsters. Three boys, two girls. That was definitely new. Cedric looked too. His eyes misted over, his head filling with memories he didn't know he never had. A tiny tweak to your life, the doctor murmured. Just enough to make you pause for thought before splitting the universe. Enough to blur their view of what else I'm doing. Hope you don't mind, Cedric. Krivix stepped towards the doctor.
You are but one man. What can one do against us?
The doctor raised his chin defiantly and fixed them with a steely glare. Oh, I'm much more than one. I'm an 11-man team, Doctors United. Right now, you're in goal, Krivix, and I'm Mike Gatting. He stole a sideways glance at a doubtful-looking Alice. He's good, isn't he? Krivix moved around him, circling but not closing. Not yet. The doctor clicked his fingers. Sorry! Beckham. I'm David Beckham. Went football, got cricket. Sorry, everyone. Alice noticed him glancing at the door. He was buying time. He carried on. You made one mistake, Krivix. You gave me the idea to talk to myself. You lot like order, inevitability, but for now, let's try a bit of imagination. Imagine this, Krivix. Imagine my last words as jigsaw pieces holding the universe together.
Your words were not sent.
Oh, but they were. They were held in that hypercube, waiting to go in its future and in its past. So when I took it from here and plugged it into my TARDIS, the old girl pinged it out. Delivery by whatever means necessary. Radio waves, psychic projection, crystal balls from the 15th century to the 49th, ending up on TARDIS 6 for lucky 7. The doctor spun on his heels, placed a finger on his nose and pointed to Alice. What's the most important thing in the universe, Watson? Physics, Alice suggested. That's right, people. People, Alice, they're what bind history together. Let me tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was a boy who ceased to exist, and so the universe ended. Nah, rubbish story, here's a better one. There was once a brave ship's captain. He survived the TARDIS Ultra Supernova thanks to my friend Ace. That gave him perspective. Captain O1 went home to his wife, a changed man, and carrying that hypercube as a souvenir. They'd met years before when he'd ferried her around the galaxy having adventures, righting wrongs, my kind of people. Thing is, even before that, Mrs. O1, or Miss Lyric Erskine, as she was then, was saved from certain death by my mate Donna. Krivix, facing the doctor, swayed. His two companions fell to their knees. The doctor rubbed his hands and continued. He was enjoying himself. Now, take Joseph. As a New Vegas police chief, he was a bit of a liability. But as mayor, Joe threw one hell of a party. He kicked off a golden age of tourism. His monument, his memorial hotel, casino, and wedding chapel, where all the hoopier space dudes get hitched, or have second honeymoons. The doctor pulled the hollow photo from his jacket and waved it in the air. A claw reached out and he snatched it away. You needed Guy Taylor to be wiped from history so you could use his time machine. But he's the end of a story I made happen. Born, 9 months after this photo, I guess. Of course, Alice, little gestures add up too. Like returning lost property, say, for instance, an Ovid sphere left in Edwardian England. The Ovids were most impressed with my friend Tegan when we finally got round to handing it back. They liked a direct approach. So they shared their psychokinetic know-how with future humanity in return. Alice, remove the kinetic stabilizers. Alice looked blankly at the doctor. What? Spirally bits, he prompted, at the front of the capsule. The Krivix on the floor twitched as Alice disconnected the components. Their leader was concentrating its entire will on remaining upright. The doctor went on talking. Of course, none of this would matter one jot if the Krivix hadn't come here, to Cedric. Ever heard of the Babel Sphere, Alice? It was a hyper-intelligent supercomputer gone insane. Surprising how often that happens. You think they develop a patch. Anyway, I got myself to drop it off at the Stellaris Museum of Artificial Intelligence on demo mode. I told the copy of me inside to broadcast certain names, certain places, like Chivers, Oxford, Earth, 2013. Did you know the museum's marketing department uses sub-pulsar transmissions to advertise? I did. That's how it reached you. Sub-pulsar transmissions bounce through the gaps between universes. Funny how science gets co-opted, eh? NASA invented the non-stick frying pan, you know? Good job I told myself to save all that research on the quiet ones. Dazed, Alice handed the doctor the rods from the capsule. He grinned and stepped past a Krivix to the filing cabinet in the corner. Of course, you can't send a load of psychic messages without interference. Ba-da-bum, 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 bum, bum. There was a particular blockage in the 1930s. Fortunately, I helped myself clear it and saw off the baddies while I was at it. Gets terribly complicated, this sort of thing. So, Krivix, why here? Why this room? The doctor clicked the Ovid stabilizers together. Energy arced between them and he held them apart. The bottom drawer of the filing cabinet slid open and a large blue-grey stone hovered upwards. Chivers rubbed his chin.
I always wondered what that was. The chap before me left it. He couldn't even lift it.
That chap was Dr. Reynard, unit's geology expert. He never liked me. Not me, anyway. I get on with everyone. I knew he'd leave it in a cupboard. It was bigger then. 40 years on and a billion miles from home. The Tharosite's condensed, but still just as heavy and earthed. It's what's keeping us stable. The doctor jiggled the psychokinetic rods, and the rock floated towards the time machine. What's more, he said gleefully, it's a great big rock. The doctor flicked the rods, and the stone smashed into the capsule. The glass frontage shattered, its engine housing crushed. Splinters of blue time core glinted in the wreckage. The machine's outline blurred, and its whole essence faded from reality. Every structure has its stress points that cause collapse, the doctor explained. I just did the opposite with the temporal universe. You think potential space-time you're consuming is linear? C follows B follows A? Amateur mistake. But you're busy scoffing pancakes, but you've never seen a chicken lay an egg. Causality is a massive join-the-dots with a room for a Da Vinci between every line. And you know what I stuffed in the gaps? An omni-paradox. Inside the TARDIS. It's been holding the USA together since the 15th century, thank you, Perry, but don't worry about that now. What it means is my ship can break free and find a way back. And here she is. Chivers gripped Alice's arm as a spinning blue police box hovered transparent in the air above them. Alice beamed, and suddenly he didn't feel quite so lost. Clever girl, called the doctor. Not you, Alice, her. Slipping through the time tracks of a history that never existed thanks to that omni-paradox. There she goes, materializing around me in your Krivix-controlled future, then landing outside, 5 minutes ago. The doctor confronted the Krivix leader. Thunder in the skies of that desolate future was nothing compared to the look Alice saw in his face now. Masters of time! Ha! Rewrite one man's history and the universe changes around you. Pass the foreign country to you, or is it all the same to me? Time Lord, you see? He pushed the Krivix in the thorax and it clattered to the floor. Behind it, where the time machine had stood, a black nothingness burned. The other two monsters were already crawling towards it. How does it feel to be like everyone else? The doctor demanded. How does it feel when you don't know what happens next? Personally, it's what I live for. The times, they are a-changing. Get out of this universe! The two Krivix fizzed into nothingness as they reached the hole in reality. Alice! The cube! The doctor yelled. Chuck it in! Alice looked down. The communicator shimmered in her hand like a piece of quartz diamond. She launched it into the void. You bent the rules, Krivix, the doctor glowered. But I tied them up in a neat little bow. That cube, carrying all of its messages to my previous selves, arrives with the bits of the time machine back. When was it, Alice? 11 months ago. And you plugged it into your TARDIS, Alice realized. She hugged the confused professor. Our paradox beats their paradox. The doctor ran a hand through his hair. All the while, the Krivix were dragging us into their trap. They were already in one. One that I didn't know I'd made. Even for me, that's impressive. The Krivix leader slammed a savage claw into the floor and dragged itself towards the doctor.
You cannot stop.
Bright blue light illuminated the laboratory. Alice and Cedric shielded their eyes as the glow intensified. Then there was a sickening crack as a time machine solidified on top of the Krivix body. Alice opened her eyes to see the capsule in its corner. The canopy swung open, and a tall blonde man stepped out. Oh. They don't tell you to expect a reception committee, he said in surprise. The doctor was the first to move. Springing forward, he shook the man's hand. Captain Guy, how are you? Nice trip. Guy returned the handshake warily. You know who I am? Of course we do. Guy Taylor. You picked your own code name when you joined the agency, didn't you, Merit 01? Guy's eyes widened. He fumbled for the anomaly tracker at his belt and checked the readings. Guy saw a cracked black claw jutting from beneath his capsule and knelt beside it. "We detected a level one temporal anomaly," he began. "All sorted out," said the doctor. "Just before you got here. In fact, you getting here is what sorted it. Paradoxical time machine letting locusts from another dimension devour the universe. Your existence stops that happening. So, you can go home. Knock off early." As Guy watched, the crushed insect remains faded away. He frowned as his tracker showed nothing. "That can't be." Alice stepped forward. "Excuse me, Mr. Taylor." There was a flicker of recognition in Taylor's eyes. "Guy, please," he said. "Can I have a ride?" Alice asked. "I mean, you obviously have to go and report this back wherever you came from. I thought I could help, explain things." Guy couldn't help smiling at the pretty girl in the glasses. She had a point, and he felt as if he knew her. "That's highly irregular," he said. "It's my scientific duty," Alice insisted. "A quick round trip to see the real future." "Oh," she broke off and looked at Chivers. "Unless you, Professor..." Chivers waved her on.
"No, my dear, I haven't the stomach for it. Doctor, it is safe."
The doctor considered, looking from Alice to Guy and back again. "Perfectly. If you're not going to read any stories, Alice Watson, you should at least be in some." Guy swung open the canopy. Alice grabbed her satchel and slid into the time machine. "People! Doctor!" she called. "I'm interested in meeting new people!" Guy saluted and grinned a rather dashing grin.
"I'll look after her. Don't worry." "I know where you live, Guy Taylor," warned the doctor. "And your mum and dad. Just make sure she's not late." "I'll bring her back yesterday if you like," Guy answered, closing the canopy.
"Whatever you do, don't do that," the doctor yelled. 2 minutes, that'll do."
Chivers stared at the afterimage of the capsule in wonder.
"It works."
"It will." The doctor placed a reassuring hand on his shoulder. "Everything in its time, Cedric. And now I think it's time for some freewheeling, Bob Dylan." The doctor heaved a box from the professor's shelf of mementos and rested it on the workbench. Chivers stared at the strange young man rifling through his record collection. For an instant, he saw a different face, an old face, alert and vital, silver hair, an air of arrogance, but the same mischievous glint in his eye.
"It's you, isn't it?"
Chivers remembered the pretty girl with the soulful eyes, the one whose radio had prompted them to buy the record all those years ago. Joyce had reminded him of her.
"How is Susan, Doctor?"
The doctor flinched, a flicker at the corner of his eye. "You're a lucky man, Cedric. Family, friends. Hang on to them with everything you've got. Before they fade." He slipped an LP from its sleeve, examining the cover. It showed a tousle-haired man in a suede jacket, a girl clinging onto his arm. "That's where that coat went," muttered the doctor, dropping the disc onto the spindle of Cedric's old turntable. He lifted the stylus. "How many roads, Cedric?" 11 so far. "And I've still no idea where I'm going. But I do have a date with Destiny waiting outside. Tall, blue, and wearing a police uniform. I owe her my lives. All of them. She's my time machine." The doctor placed the needle on the record. 1963, he sighed. "Classic year." The sound from the speakers was drowned out by that of the returning capsule. Thrilled and relieved, Chivers stepped forward to greet the two travellers. He looked back and saw his laboratory door swing closed. The doctor had gone.
"That man never stops moving."
Cedric hoped he never would. Doctor Who, The Time Machine, by Matt Fitton, was performed by Jenna Coleman, with Michael Cochrane as Chivers, and Nicholas Briggs as the Creevix. It was a Big Finish production for Audio Go. Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.